Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the Federal City. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
New from U.S. author Mike Palachuk, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Palachuk reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging the complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever on the move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly, because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachuk's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Palachuk writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Palachuk. The website again, newamericandream.info.
It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachuk, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
It's been another busy week. I just finished a Kindle book about a woman who survived slavery and ended up reunited with her husband in the early 19th century. I read the end notes for the book, something I often skip, and was startled to learn there are more people in slavery today than there were in 1800. Four times more, in fact. I'd heard of human trafficking, saw films that centered on the exploitation of young women, largely wrote it off as just that, exploitation films. I never realized it was real, nor that there were such large numbers associated with it. Not that numbers really matter. Even one is too many. Just as even one person killed in war is too many. America does a lot of that, waging wars in at least six countries currently, I think. On the home front, my mom's doing pretty well. There's still life in the project I've been working on, and the tenants in our building have been doing better on the rent. Lorraine and I miss Bill, our friend who died in his apartment a couple weeks back, but life goes on. My co-host, Mike Palachuk, has a new book coming out soon. We'll be telling you more about that as the release date gets closer. For now, I just want to tell you it's very, very good. It's quite different from mine. It takes place in the time of President John F. Kennedy, and Although the characters are still larger than life, they explore a different side of America than his other novels. I hope all our listeners will look forward to reading Johnny Moon. And on that note, I'm going to turn the show over to Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Hey, Chuck. Hey, everybody. I'm coming to you today from the Cloquet, Minnesota McDonald's, or the parking lot. I'm parked out by the drive-thru lane here, and I'm looking out at the National Guard unit across the street, and I'm hoping I don't draw any undue attention sitting in the car with the car running and my headphones on, but we'll just see how that goes. It should be all right. Well, tonight we welcome back Ken Greenlee and Sam Smith. Ken's coming to us from Denver, and I think Sam is living in Maine now. I think he moved from D.C. to Maine. So we're coming to you tonight from Vancouver, Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Denver, and Maine. Current events, I'd like to talk about some of those. There's some things happening this fall that are pretty cool. You all know about the Citizens for Legitimate Government, CLG, Lori Price, the Seize, S-E-I-Z-E, Seize D.C. movement or action. If you want to Google Seize D.C. or Citizens for Legitimate Government, I think what's happening here is there's a couple of these groups actually that people are just getting tired, and they're not. What's that one show that was Network? I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore. And they just and they don't have any. I don't either have any faith in Obama. He just fooled us. We've just been fooled maybe one too many times. But anyway, Seize DC starts on September 10th, 2011, and you go there for details, but the basic of it is that they're going to stay in D.C. until things change, which is a big order, but I sure wish them well. There's also a group. I got a letter, email from Christine Gaunt from Iowa, and there's a group, if you go to October2011.org, I'll just read a little bit from their website. October 2011 is the 10th anniversary of the invasion of Afghanistan, the beginning of the 2012 federal austerity budget. It's time to light the spark that sets off a true democratic, nonviolent transition to a world in which people are free to create just and sustainable solutions. Okay. Well, that's kind of blah, blah, blah. But anyway, here's the good stuff. I pledge that if any U.S. troops, contractors, or mercenaries remain in Afghanistan on Thursday, October 6th, as that occupation goes into its 11th year, I will commit to being in Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. with others on that day or the days immediately following for as long as I can, with the intention of making it our Tahrir Square, Cairo, or Madison, Wisconsin, where we will nonviolently resist the corporate machine by occupying Freedom Plaza until our resources are invested in human needs and environmental protection instead of war and exploitation. We can do this together. We will be the beginning. And we'll sure be covering and paying close attention to the Seize DC and October 6th action in Washington, D.C. This seems like it's something that we really do need. I mean, voting Democrat. I mean, how many times are we going to be fooled by that, you know? Vote Democrat and change things. Yeah, right. I also want to mention, again, Richard Flamer. He's been on our show. He's in the Chiapas, Mexico Catholic Worker. And I want to read a little bit, just a brief excerpt from his last newsletter. We struggle ourselves here, Araceli and I, with enough money to get through each month. But I always feel ashamed to ask for more money when the people around us are so poor, much poorer than we are, though Araceli assures me that we are at the bottom of the middle class here. What a scary thought to be in the middle class on $600 a day in this, $600 a month in this day and age. We would like to find another 8 people who would give us each $50 a month to make it an even $1,000 to live on. And if you can send money to the Chiapas Project, send it to in care of Holy Family Catholic Church, 1715 Izzard Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68102. And Richard closes by saying, saludos a todos. And I'm pretty sure that means hello to all. Last night I went to a lecture by Jim Fetzer at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and it was just amazing. It was titled, Are the Wars in Iraq and Afghanistan Justified by 9/11? And I just want to say it was great. I don't know if it'll be on YouTube, but I plug for Jim Fetzer. He has a radio show called The Real Deal, and he's just been around for a long time, and he's got He's just great. He's just one of our heroes. I mean, we have so many heroes that nobody knows anything about. And if you would to Google Jim Fetzer, you might be able to find out more about him. But he was right there with right online, same as CLG on the murder of Paul Wellstone, and he's been right on all of this. Also, this is my last one here, but this might take me a little bit to read. July 20th in Kansas City, there were some people who were protesting they're building a new nuclear weapons facility in Kansas City, if you can believe that, building a new one. They're not tearing it down, an old one, they're building a new one. And so these folks, I think what they did was trespass, and they went to court. And Frank Cordero from the Des Moines Catholic Worker wrote a letter, and I'm going to take a few minutes here. What the gist of it is that they were not convicted. I mean, they were given time served, and they were given fines, and it was just good news, I guess, is what Frank was trying to tell us all. And this is the closing. I'll read the closing of his letter here. This is Frank Cordero from the Des Moines Catholic Worker about being in court on July 20th in Kansas City. I was the last person to appear before Judge Franco, representing myself. I told her that I wanted to plead guilty as long as I was allowed to speak before sentencing. She reminded me that only defendants who could be sent to jail had a right to speak. She took a look at the computer before her and then told me that I qualified. I told the judge that was at least one good thing about the possibility of being sent to jail in her court. Then she reminded me that it did not necessarily mean that I would be sentenced to jail, and I responded, I know, and I had great hopes that what I say will persuade you not to send me to jail. I began by telling the judge that I agreed with everything that Steve Jacobs, another defendant, had said in his previous statement. I, too, was not going to pay any fines or do any community service. Then I told her there was yet another reason I'm not going to pay any fine or court costs levied against me. It has to do with the system, the justice system. I told the judge, this is not personally directed at you, Judge, but at the whole justice system. We Catholic workers are known for doing the works of mercy in our houses of hospitality, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, welcoming the stranger, visiting the prisoner, housing the homeless. For our guests, doing jail time is as common as the common cold. It's a fact of life in the lives of the poor and people of color whom we serve. The single most common reason for them being in jail is their lack of money. They say you get the justice you can afford in this country. If you have $1 million, you get $1 million worth of justice. And if you got 2 cents, you'll get 2 cents worth. It's even worse for the poor because the system nickels and dimes them to death with all the court costs, fees, and fines levied against them. In some cities like Des Moines, they even get charged jail fees at $48 a day. Some will never get out of debt. When I talked to one local Kansas City attorney about representing us here in court today, he said that this municipal court was nothing more than a collection agency, hardly a place where justice is served. You know as well as I do, Judge, that the majority of the people locked up in your jail are poor and people of color, and they're primarily there because they don't have enough money to get themselves out. So I'm telling you, Your Honor, if you sentence me to jail today, every day will be a privileged day in which I can share the plight of the poor whom we serve at our Catholic workers. The courtroom is spontaneously filled with applause, but just as quickly silenced by the court bailiff. Now it was Judge Franco's turn to talk. She leaned across the bench and her voice carried all the way back to the back part of the courtroom. She said that before she was a judge, she was a defense lawyer for 25 years and often defended the same kind of people we serve at our Catholic workers. She said she knew well the demographics of the Kansas City jail and did not disagree with me on these facts. Judge Franco was especially aware of the role of mental health in the criminal justice system, saying, our county jails are probably the biggest mental health facilities in this county. She told us that she became a judge in hopes of being able to better the plight of the poor and the mentally ill. She listed a number of programs that she helped get started that served the needs of indigent inmates, homeless vets, and the mentally ill. She told us that as a judge, she has lobbied at the state level not to prevent cutting mental health care. She said it was the dumbest thing the state legislators ever did when they cut mental health funds. Frank concludes by saying, when the judge was done speaking, the courtroom erupted in applause again, and the court bailiff tried to silence the room. When the courtroom returned to silence, Judge Franco gave me the same sentence she gave Steve Jacobs and Ed Bloomer, a $500 fine plus court costs to be paid within 90 days. Then Judge Franco smiled and said, but I'm sure that you'll eventually be found in contempt of court. I told the judge, I already am. And she said, I know. good news from the Kansas City court, where the Catholic workers are trying to stop the construction of a new nuclear weapons facility. And there are so many things happening around the country that are worthy of our notice and also of our attention, our encouragement. And it always also encourages us, because these people definitely are not afraid, and so they help us. And we can say to ourselves, we are not afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek.
For what reason, we have no idea. We would also like to shout out those men and women serving in 10,000 countries and municipalities, islands, peninsulas, knolls, glens, gullies, inlets, deltas, fjords, and firths overseas. Serving in Berlin and Aachen and Baden and Pfaffen and Mummum and Gierdorf and Daden and Dasher and Prancer and Donner and Blitzen. We need you. For what reason, we have no idea. But thank you for all you do. We're pleased to send you 50% of our tax dollars. For what reason, we have no idea. But because you're there and they thank you at ball games and on beer commercials, we thank you for all that you do. For what reason, we have no idea.
I'd like to now bring on our first guest, Ken Greenlee. Ken is coming to us from Denver. Are you there, Ken?
Yes, I am. How you doing, Mike?
Awesome. The sound's great tonight. What are you up to tonight? What are you doing today? What'd you do?
Oh, well, got prepared for the show, worked on some new poems, watched a little baseball. That's about it.
How are the Stones doing?
Oh, dropping like a stone.
Hey, last time we were on, we talked just briefly about your background, and you grew up in New York City, and to me, I've visited there, but I just think New York City is fascinating, and I'd like to hear more about that, and I'd also like to hear whatever poems you have for us tonight, so I'm going to like to turn it over to you, Ken.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Oh, by the way, I heard that derisive chuckle when you talked about voting Democrat, and let me say, I 1,000% agree. Well, yeah, growing up in New York and being the oldest was really interesting, because you get chucked in with a bunch of other kids, and like I said, being the oldest, you're the first one out there, so you got to kind of forge your way, make your way in the world, and it's a big world, and in New York, and also there's a lot of cement, and the cement, I found it forced me to use my imagination. So let me get right into it with these poems that'll tell you more about it. Education. I'm glad I got my early education in New York City. The playground part was especially instructive. You really get to see what people are all about on a New York City playground. Learning to swim by jumping in the water, thrown in and mixed with all kinds of derelicts and delinquents. A clean slate just waiting to be scratched. Every day a new eye-opening experience. The various types of people I met were particularly informative. The first and most obvious, of course, the bully, and of course, his sidekick and followers. And of course, too, the perpetual victims, always running or gathered in a self-protective huddle in the playground's far corner. Less obvious were the both sides players, the I'm your pal type, your pal one day, your enemy's pal the next. More striking were the natural gregarious smoothies, who somehow got along with everyone. Never understood them. Couldn't see how they did it. A lot of hustlers on the New York City playground, too. The fast talkers and scammers always had an angle going, even back then. And then there was that whole lot that just didn't care. The cold faces turned away. Crowd members that always predictably sided with other crowd members. Running when you needed them, crowding in when you didn't. Also, I remember the poor bastards that stood against the crowd. Hard to be an individual on the New York City playground. Noticed that right away. Kept doing it anyway. Was good for a black eye or two. Sadly, things haven't changed much since the playground. Look at the relations between us, individually, as groups, in neighborhoods, between countries. It's still bullies and victims. Bullies and victims. Both sides, players and hustlers. Uncaring crowds and those who stand against them. All the types I met on the playground, only now adult and running the world. An oversimplification? Maybe, but hard to argue against, seeing how it all works. It all has such a familiar look. The same rules still seem to apply. That's why I'm grateful for my New York City playground education. It comes in handy on numerous occasions, even to this day. This one's just called City Playground. Life can be tough on a small boy on a city playground. Nothing but steel and concrete stretching for miles in every direction. Young eyes greedily grab for space, green freedom. I remember how it was all left up to my soul's eye. How it transformed high brick walls into ponderous canyons where Indians and outlaws roamed wild. Holes in chain-link fences became portholes to other times. The playground blacktop, a nighttime ocean, the basketball backboards, hulking, titanic sinking icebergs, and straight up, that small square of sky enclosed by buildings, seemed bluer, reached higher, the clouds more free and drifting, each one scarce, precious. Empire State Poem. Empire State Building says, I am the king again, king again, king again on his high lonely throne, king again in Midtown all alone. And now he's looking to the south for his stricken fallen sisters, the Chrysler Building hunched by his side like a scared little brother. Big arched window eyes weep, gone away, gone away. Empty sky echo, gone to stay, gone to stay. The tunnel is closed. Big hollow mouth gapes. The battery's gone dead. The big bridge is bent. The sky cries. The bay is full of tears. The Statue of Liberty has turned away. She stares out to the east, still looking for liberty out there somewhere. Look away, over the waters cold and gray. But the ferry still rolls for a half a buck a day. But the ferry still rolls for a half a buck a day. The people say they don't know why. Look away, look away. The ones that do know, look down. What's to say, what's to say? New thoughts awaken in the back of the mind as new light, new facts come to light and fall in line. Voices whisper to what's left of our conscience. Who really did this? Who really did this? So That was a dirge I wrote after 9/11. I had already moved out here to Denver by then. Basically, what happened to me, I went to New York City schools till I was about 10, and then my dad got a job in New Jersey, which everybody was doing. And New Jersey was woodsier, so then I wanted to see more and more woods and bigger woods, and the traveling bug bit me. And I always liked it out here in Denver anytime I passed through. Eventually, I made it my home. Now I have one other piece here called Stealth Fighter. I heard it before I saw it, a loud roaring over the backyard, like a scraping against the sky. I went to the front of the house, looked up, and there it was, a stealth fighter bomber flying right over the house on its way to thrill the crowd at the football stadium. My house is right between the Air Force Base and the stadium, so every once in a while one of their toys strays into my airspace. This time, pretty unbelievable. A big triangle in the sky, black, sleek, thought I might be seeing a UFO, what with the hangover I had. It swooped down over the neighborhood like a hawk, a metallic bird of prey, roared over the next block, then rolled, leveled off, turning to a thin, scythe-like line as it whooshed away, making the same sky-cracking sound as it left. I guess whoever put on this show wanted me to say ooh and ah at their friendly version of shock and awe, but it didn't quite work out that way. Instead, all I could think of was what it would be like to get attacked by one of these things, especially if you were an innocent civilian, like in so many attacks we read about. Imagine that. You're making mud bricks in Afghanistan, or maybe looking out at your fields, figuring out a way to water them. Kids playing outside, wife inside making dinner. Then here it comes, that scraping, roaring sound. First your eyes strain to see it, a thin, sickle-shaped line in the sky growing exponentially. And before you can say, what the hell is that? It's right on top of you, a terrifying black triangle swooping down like a falcon. Bullets and bombs rain down on your family. Your house disappears in an earth-shaking, roiling fireball. Whoops, just another mistake, a little more collateral damage. That's what I thought about when the stealth fighter bomber flew over my house. No pride or patriotism, no Washingtonian hubris or arrogance. Instead, I saw their fighter bomber through the eyes of, quote, the enemy, unquote. People in mud brick houses on a faraway continent, killed by extrajudicial remote control for practicing the wrong religion in the wrong place, right in the way of one of their oil pipelines. How are we doing
awesome,
on time,
Ken.
Mike?
Do you have another short one?
I got another short one, yeah. It's called Peace, man. People sure talk about peace a lot. They say peace before they leave you and sign letters with peace as a salutation. Some people even got bumper stickers that urge us to visualize world peace. But what do people really mean by peace? From what I've seen, to most people, especially Americans, peace means nobody fights me as I continue to have it my way all the time. This is not peace. This is domination. This is why the fighting starts. Peace my way is not peace at all, outer or inner. So if you flash me the peace sign, buddy, at least know what it means. There
you
go.
Thank you, Ken.
And I'd just like to add to that stealth fighter poem that I think all poets and writers in the U.S., or many poets and writers in America should be writing about, both the bombing of civilians and especially these drone aircraft. Every day, there's another immoral and illegal drone aircraft strike that probably kills at least a dozen people. And this is just an incredible... Our country is earning incredible bad karma doing this. So,
I agree. Hey, Ken, do you have anything
you
want to plug? Do you have anything you want to plug, like a book or an event or even a cause, something you're a part of that you want to plug quick?
Well, my work can be seen on a couple of different internet outlets. You can see my poetry on a site out of Paris called outlawpoetry.com. And you can see some of my longer fiction on shortfiction-uk.co. Oh, I'm sorry, short-fiction.co. .uk. Oh yeah, and also I'm leading off we're having a poetry festival here in Denver over on the Ziggy's Blues Bar on the west side, and that's going on for 3 days. It's workshops and readings and bands. Should be a lot of fun. It's on August 13th to 15th.
And to get information about that, is there a website for that place?
Yeah, that's what I mentioned last time.
Okay.
And it's on the west side of Denver. It's a blues bar, but they have poetry readings usually on cocktail hour on Wednesdays, but they're having a big festival on that weekend, August 13th to 15th.
That should be fun.
And the lady that runs it, Julie Cummings, is a real poetry fan and workshop person, and just a good getter together of people.
That's cool. It's cool they have something like that. I'm not, you know, I suppose they do in the larger cities. I've never really lived in a large city, but I just think it's awesome that somebody cares enough to take the time to organize and to write the poetry for stuff like that. I think it's very cool.
Yeah, me too. I was doing it for a while, but I was organizing some readings, but now I just show up to them. But it's great.
Get back
great
to work writing
like
some more.
Me, man.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Ken, and you have a good night, okay?
All right. Try not to attract too much attention, Mike. All right. Talk to you later.
I'm trying to stay low here in the car here. Okay. See you later.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek.
If you are a good American, then with all the poking and probing, you might well be asking yourself, am I a terrorist? Well, the Center for American Studies has put together a handy brochure now available in most U.S. interstate rest areas. It's called Mommy, Am I a Terrorist? Some excerpts. If you're driving past a policeman in the United States, you might be a terrorist. If your Reader's Digest subscription has expired, you might be a terrorist. If you order a salad, you might be a terrorist. If you're walking down the street in a small town, you might be a terrorist. If your American flag on your front porch flapping in the breeze is not larger than a goddamn circus tent, you might be a terrorist. But if you're directing by remote control from the portico off the Rose Garden while smoking a cigarette surreptitiously in your pajamas, a drone airplane hits the home of a family in a small town in Pakistan, rips their arms and legs from their bodies, their heads from their shoulders, forever destroys the lives of their extended family as well, hey, you might be a terrorist.
We're also proud to be sponsored this evening by Dumb Guys Hunting, Hunting Guides of Dubuque. Are you a dumb guy? Do you want to go hunting? There you go. Give us a call. We'll go with you. We are Dumb Guys Hunting, Hunting Guides of Dubuque. And just in this late-breaking news brief, the House Un-American Activities Committee will be reconvening next week. The committee will be investigating un-American activities such as the murder of children in Iraq and Afghanistan and the restricting of personal freedoms through the so-called Patriot Act, as well as the infiltration of American organizations by members of clandestine terror groups. Are you now, or have you ever been, a member of the Central Intelligence Agency? Appearing next week before the committee will be Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, Matt Lauer, Katie Couric, Diane Sawyer, Brian Williams, and in absentia, Peter Jennings.
We tend to discount the importance of unplanned moments because of our fealty to the business school paradigm in which change properly occurs Because of a careful strategic plan and organized vision, procedures, and process. During the past quarter century, when such ideas have been in ascendancy, however, America has demonstrably deteriorated as a political, economic, and moral force. In reality, many of the best things happen by accident and indirection. While it may be true, as the Romans said, that fortune smiles on the well-prepared, part of that preparation is to be in the right place at the right time. In other words, it's necessary to create an ecology of change rather than a precise and often illusory process. That's a quote from Sam Smith. And Sam is our guest tonight, and I welcome him to the New American Dream Radio Show. Are you there, Sam?
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm fine. I found that thing on your website, and I liked it, so I decided to use it as an intro.
Well, thank you, sir. I think that we've sort of lost our appreciation for taking advantage of unplanned moments.
Indeed. Spontaneity can be a very good thing, a very powerful thing. The ad lib is a lost art, I think.
Yeah, I was just thinking of it today because I came across a YouTube of a mob, flash mob at a Walmart. And I was thinking after I watched it for about 5 minutes how cheerful it made me feel. And they were in there dancing and with instruments and music.
Hey, that's great.
And I think we tend not to appreciate that. We tend to think that everything has to be very orderly. A few days ago, you know about Google, the n-gram charts they have where you can put in any word or any phrase and you can see how many times it's been used in books since the 1860s. So the other day I put in business model. And, it just soared from the 90s on.
I bet it has.
And the interesting thing is that our business model since the 1990s hasn't been very good.
Well, we've refined it too far, I think.
Yeah.
just like the foods, the sugars that where we refined all the good things out. So, you've been in this business for quite a long time. You interviewed JFK, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I interviewed him briefly after he had announced for president in 1960.
Uh-huh.
And I got started in the 50s.
Okay.
Back in a time when I started out as a radio newsman.
Mm-hmm.
And there were only about a half dozen of us in Washington who had battery-operated tape recorders. And
wow.
It was wonderful because you could go up to anybody with one of these tape recorders, and they'd stop and talk to you. They were so novel.
Well, that certainly changed. What other changes might you have noticed since the 50s or 60s?
Well, it was a time of supposed quiet in which many things were happening. For example, one of the problems with the tapes that you made at that time was that you kept recording over them so that for history you didn't save an awful lot. But one of the ones that I saved that I really value was a civil rights sit-in at Glen Echo Amusement Park in 1960. And I have the live confrontation between the guard and the leader of the protest. And that may seem very ordinary today, but it was rare enough that when CBS was doing a piece on that period, they used that tape because it was so hard to find it. And one of the things that strikes me about that period is that if you go back a year or two earlier, you would have said, well, nothing much is going to happen. And then all of a sudden it did. And I was talking to a friend of mine today about this, and I said, you know, I sort of feel like we're back in the 1950s. We're kind of stuck. But the thing, the optimistic side of it is that, for example, on one day, a group of young blacks sat in at a counter in North Carolina, and within 6 months, there were 25 sit-ins all around the country. And nobody could have predicted that.
So you think maybe there's hope for something to happen in modern, you know, in this era?
Well,
the one we're living in now?
You just never can tell. One of the examples I like to use is that I think it was in 1848. There was the first women's conference in Seneca Falls, and 300 people showed up for that conference. Now, we know about that conference because we know history, but what you may not know is that only two of the women who went to that conference lived long enough to vote. And so the question I ask people is that if you had been able to go to that conference, would you have gone to it, or would you have said, well, it's not worth the trouble? And that's really the problem that all of us face when we're trying to produce change, is you never know which ones are going to bomb and which ones are going to be very useful.
And the ones, and you may never know during your lifetime.
That's right, that's right. That's that's almost what happened with these two women. I mean,
right,
they were the lucky ones.
That's so true.
And
the,
there's a philosophical approach to this, which you don't hear much about anymore these days, but existentialism basically taught that while you can't predict change, what's going to happen, you can always control how you react to the situation you're in. And one of the existential philosophers said that even a condemned man has a choice of how to approach the gallows. And I think in a time when it's very easy to become frustrated and depressed and give up, that the one tool that we have in any time is the ability to react to the time that we're in. And whether it works or not is another question.
I know that keeping a positive attitude in my own personal life has made a tremendous difference in how I have reacted to a number of setbacks over the years, or disappointments, you know, whether they were my own fault or not. Keeping a positive attitude and looking for the good things, learning, always progressing, can make an incredible difference in one's life, you know, on a personal and also a public level.
Yeah, although I most people wouldn't call me an optimist, but my approach is a little bit different, is that regardless of what's going to happen, I've got this moment to react to it. How am I going to react to it? Now, if it works out, that's great.
I wasn't necessarily suggesting optimism as much as a happy attitude toward whatever happens. You can, when things happen to you, you can get depressed and crawl into a hole and do nothing, or you can look for something that's good about it and, you know, latch onto that and take it somewhere else. So I don't think it's optimism so much as it's just taking hold of what happens and going with it.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And if you're, I've over the years have met a lot of people who have been longtime activists, and you wonder about how they keep doing it. And you realize that it's really in their personalities, that they're not saying that I'm going to give up tomorrow if this doesn't work.
Right.
Now, at the same time, it's really important to always be looking at what you're doing or what the group is doing and saying, is this the best that we could do right now? And right now, I don't, you know, I mean, I spend a lot of time thinking about it. I don't have any great answers, but I have a sense that we're not doing everything we could do. That, for example, I go back far enough to know that at the beginning, the Internet was seen as a tremendously positive force that could be used by progressive organizations to produce change. Well, unfortunately, that isn't true. I mean, the fact is that since the Internet was invented, this country has moved dramatically to the right. Now, that's not the Internet's fault, but on the other hand, it didn't stop it. So,
could have been used to produce change. It's just that it hasn't worked out that way because the other side found out about it, too.
That's right. That's right. And, it isn't a matter of saying, that doesn't work, but it's a matter of saying, well, how could we use it differently?
Right.
One of the things I remember from even before the web, the Internet was being used, and one of the places it was being used, there was some philanthropist who gave some money to college students to use the Internet, which was quite new then, to help organize the anti-apartheid movement. And the way it was used would be what we would call today listservs. And basically what these students did was to exchange information as to what worked and what didn't work in their protests. So if they had a really good reaction to some sort of protest, you know, everybody around the country and the other colleges would know it. And I don't see an awful lot of that today on the web because I think we're all sort of atomized and we're not very good at sharing useful information with one another. And we talk about, you know, you can read about what the particular organization is doing that's on the web, but how do you get everybody sort of working together?
Well, I think that newsletters and places like Facebook are an attempt to do that, to fulfill that function. But, there's a problem with newsletters these days. The anti-spam laws, which are great at reducing all the junk that comes in our inbox, have also been used to cut down on the dissemination of information via mailing lists. I know at least three different mailing lists I belong to. One of them from a university. I have a notice at the top of my Gmail every time I read the thing telling me that this message may not have come from the person you think it did and all this sort of thing. If I were the suspicious type, I might think it was a conspiracy to reduce the free exchange of information. But
well, there are a whole wealth of problems like that, and I guess what you just have to do is just sort of tackle them one by one. I mean, for example, email is not as popular as it used to be as a means of getting the word out, in part because of Facebook. And also Twitter. Now, I'm a journalist. I'm a writer. I'm used to writing more than 140 characters.
Yeah, I have a real hard time with Twitter. I can't.
Yeah. So this is very hard.
You're writing headlines. All you're doing is writing headlines.
So basically, what I do with Twitter is I simply transfer our headlines there. And
yep.
That seems to work pretty well.
With
the other thing I think about is that when I'm, say, I'm using Facebook, is, and also with the web in general now, I'm more and more thinking in terms of haiku. In other words, that thing you read at the beginning is an example of the sort of stuff I put up now more than I used to. Rather than longer articles I put up, I try to find really short stuff. Because that's where people are these days. I mean, we can argue about whether that's good or not, but, I mean, you have to deal with the fact that that's where people are.
Yeah, that's exactly true. People have a very short attention span these days. Sam, this has been a lot of fun, but we're out of time.
Hey,
is there
sorry
anything
about that.
You would like
enjoyed it.
To... Is there anything you'd like to tell us about you know, that you're working on, someplace you want our listeners to go and look?
Well, if they go to our front page, ProRev.com, I wrote a piece about the GOP's uncivil war, which I thought was had some pretty interesting stuff in it about the history, where what the GOP is doing now fits in history, and you might find that interesting.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. And
hey, thank you.
We look forward to seeing you again in a couple months or 3 months. And,
great. See you then.
Again. Good night.
Good night.
Hello.
This program is being brought to you in part by the Iowa Ministry of Fear. If you're not afraid, you're just not trying. Look out your window. We said look out the damn window. What you see is communists, terrorists, criminals, Mexicans, and big bees. What you see, look, now, what you see are underwear bombers, crotch bombers, conspiracy theorists, burning backpacks, witches, and big bees. What you might also see are goldfinches, very commonly used by terrorists. Bird feeders are likely drop-off areas for terrorist stuff. Have you also seen slow drivers in your neighborhood, disguised as old ladies in white, blue, or gray hair, slouched down so low it looks like nobody's driving? Terrorists. Call Walmart before it's too late. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Because we're your Iowa Ministry of Fear. We're also sponsored this evening by a grant from Warm and Fuzzy Smallpox Blankets from Muncie, Indiana. Made in the USA. Good old Merkin know-how. Smallpox blankets, drone airplanes, anthrax, and nuclear weapons. Bombs, bullets, fighter planes. Our product. Welcome to life in 21st century America, where our products are death, destruction, low-paying jobs, and tossing overboard the poor, sick, and elderly, all to support the war racket. Made in the USA. Warm and Fuzzy Smallpox Blankets of Muncie.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. Michael M., we've been following his escapades. After he ran his moped, remember? He ran his moped into the War Memorial, and he chipped off a part of, I think it was World War II, and they called him the Big Evil One, and he got captured and sent to Gitmos. And then he gave a guard a button to escape. He got captured again, got put in the parade, he escaped again. And then he got escorted by his neighbor when he went over to say hello when he was on escape, and he got egged by his neighbor's kids. Then he was going to be shot by his neighbors after they finished handing out the guns and figuring out which ammo goes with each gun. Well, he ran off, and right now he's probably hiding in some peony bushes, trying not to get peed on by the town cop and figuring out a way to get registered for the home helper show so his wife won't be pissed, because the big drawing is coming up next week in the school gym. It'll be hot without a doubt, and we will be there next week. But for this week, on Tuesday afternoon on the TSOL, this side of Liberty, a couple sat on their front porch rocking, enjoying the sun, holding paper plates to their brows against the glare. On the sidewalk, a young boy wearing a red and blue Twins ball cap turned backward, balanced on a skateboard, headed downhill. Around the corner, a cat scampered across the street, headed for the shade. It paused in the middle to scratch and sniff, a flat robin. A green leaf fluttered straight down. In the front window of the Blind Spot Cafe, a group of older men in colored seed corn caps sipped coffee with old hands overmatching the dainty cups. A man held on as he rode a green mower, swathing back and forth over the side lawn of the Reformed Church. Blue jay calls pierced the air at long intervals, like boat horns in a fog of dense boredom. Two young Christian mother walkers hustled along, pumping arms, smiling at every opportunity. Two shirtless college summer workers on the construction crew at the high school gymnasium project paused to watch, hands on hips. And a group of kids sat in the middle of the concrete basketball court at the park with the ball in the middle of the circle. A young man flipped the sign to closed and locked the door of the Mexican grocery store, wiped his brow, and got on his daughter's pink bicycle to head home, passing without noticing one of the black and white Department of Road signs recently appearing in the area that said, "Boo! Stay afraid, stay alive, stop, drop, and roll." And on the edge of town, a driver looked left to notice on a small dairy a painting on the wall inside a bedroom. And outside in the yard, all the cows grouped together to look in the window. And behind them, in the broom grass of the ditch, the farmer and wife also facing the house, looking in at the cows and the bedroom and the painting on the wall. And the painting is the same scene, the room, the cows in the yard, the couple in the ditch.
On the OSOL, the other side of liberty, a cockatoo clung to an overturned bookshelf in a ransacked bookstore. A monkey sat in a broken window, wondering whether to come in or go out. Outside on the dirt road, kids played soccer with a ball of knotted rags. An old woman sat under a baobab tree, stroking the thin hair of a gaunt child. The girl's cheekbones struck from her skin like a nose into a window screen. The child did not speak, but looked out at the world with big, wide eyes. She lay on the ground, her head in the old woman's lap, the bones of her legs in a skewed figure four. Ants crawled on her calloused heels. The girl's bony chest raised and lowered slowly. She looked all around at the cats, the lion cubs, the jets in the sky, the leftover election signs, the cloudless blue skies, trying to take it all in. A 100 boxcar train roared past on the tracks, blowing its whistle. The cockatoo squawked, and the monkey chattered and scurried from the sill up an elm tree. A cat howled somewhere in the neighborhood. A line of sweat grew down the old woman's wrinkled forehead onto the closed lips of the child. The elevator dryers hummed a happy tune. The bells of an ice cream truck jingled over near Freedom and Homeland as the old woman raised her face to the sun and shrieked. Tears climbed down her cheeks. She gently closed the young girl's eyes. She clenched her hands into fists and gritted her teeth. Boom! On this side of Liberty, in the neighborhood of Honor Avenue and 14th Street, a cream minivan sat lifeless, smoldering in the middle of the street. Inside, the seats and roof and mom and dad and brother and sister fastened seatbelts blazed bright like Roman candles. Rich black smoke poured from the hulk. Metal and parts and rubber and ball glove and baby doll and Happy Meal littered the cement and yards around. Sirens and lights and screams and people with hands on their cheeks raced toward the red glare bonfire. The old woman knelt to slide her arms under the girl, never to hold her own child. She pulled the girl to her breast and stood strong. She walked barefoot over the sparse lawn and thorns across the dirt road and out into a dry, hard field.
An other side, young boy of 10, looking like a 6-year-old, lay on a bed in his family's front room. All around him, relatives knelt and sat as his father led the rosary. The boy joined the refrain as long as he could, then listened, then slept. When his father finished, he walked over to his only son to feel his chest. The man dropped his head to his breast, and the mailbox of a this side brick home exploded, flattening the house and ripping to bloody strips and chunks the Siamese, Dalmatian, and retired couple, all seated in the air-conditioned living room watching TV, nibbling burnt almond ice cream. At about the same time, maybe a few minutes later, a baby passed away from malnutrition in a grass hut in the country, and the Liberty Bank and Trust was instantly turned into an untidy mass of metal and glass and paper, into brick bits and dust and teeth chips and parts of skull and femur and crispy burned white skin.
All through the night, as children died on the other side, an explosion immediately followed on this side, including five more homes and seven shiny black Hummer BJ. An elderly couple with stately gray hair and a winter home in Phoenix out for a night stroll exploded from time devices and the elastic of their depends. Their heads rolled down the street before bumping into the arm. The limbs provided a perch for neighborhood crows until daybreak.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the summer help bounty hunters are about average.
And that's our show for tonight. We'd like to thank Rock Creek Free Press for continuing to sponsor us. And be sure to check them out. They're a great paper. We'd like to thank World News Trust, that's worldnewstrust.com, for supplying our show's websites and Mike's books websites. That's the show.newamericandream.info. And we'd like to thank Lena Sanek, who produces our show, and we hope you'll stay tuned for his show that immediately follows ours. Thanks again. Thanks, Mike, and good night.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
Black Op Radio presents Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, the DVD Complete Collection. Finally, the DVD set you've been waiting for is available. Over 15 hours with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty. Over 15 hours. Over 15 hours. Over 15 hours. Interviews with Len Osanek, John Judge, David Ratcliffe, and more. This is a one-of-a-kind set. These interviews feature Fletcher Prouty having candid conversations regarding his 23 years in the military, but specifically 9 years in the Pentagon from 1955 to 1964. His inside knowledge is invaluable to researchers of this era of American and world history. These are the revelations you've been waiting for. Over 15 hours with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, the complete DVD collection. Available at the Colonel Prouty reference site, www.prouty.org, and blackopradio.com. New from U.S. author Mike Palachuk, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Palachuk reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging the complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever-on-the-move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly, because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachuk's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Palachuk writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Palachuk. The website again, newamericandream.info.
It's a political rally, a free speech zone, a town hall meeting. It's an interrogation at NSA headquarters. Now, it's time to make a statement. Time to represent. Time to let them know who you are. That you're part of the Black Op. With a brand new Black Op Radio t-shirt. Comes in all sizes. Wear it loud and proud. Join the Black Op today, www.blackopradio.com.
If you believe there's more to the JFK assassination and the mystery surrounding the CIA and its covert operations, you're not alone. Meet the man Oliver Stone called X in the epic motion picture JFK. Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty comes forward with never-before-seen or heard documentation and information about JFK, the Vietnam War, the CIA, and more on a brand new CD-ROM. The collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty is an incredible offer not to be missed. For a limited time only, find the answers surrounding these issues and more with the collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty. Call now at area code 604-525-4167. That's area code 604-525-4167. Or visit the Colonel Prouty reference site on the World Wide Web. The collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty.
Interviews with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, Secrets of the U-2 Flight. We are pleased to announce Volume 1 of Interviews with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty on DVD. This first one-hour DVD goes through the 1960 U-2 incident with Gary Powers. Colonel Fletcher Prouty reveals his inside knowledge of the incident, his office in the Pentagon, Operation Aquatone, Soviet overflights, and the similar Alan Pope incident. It is Prouty's position that the U-2 flight was sabotaged by the members of a secret team to stop the crusade for peace and embarrass President Eisenhower, thereby heating up the Cold War. And of course, Eisenhower warned everyone of the industrialized military complex that he had learned of firsthand in this incident. You will learn Gary Powers' U-2 never was shot down at 70,000 feet, as claimed in every single history book. Four separate interviews on one DVD, a one-of-a-kind must-have for anyone interested in finding the truth behind the cover story. Interviews with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, Secrets of the U-2 Flight.
It's a political rally, a free speech zone, a town hall meeting. It's an interrogation at NSA headquarters. Now, it's time to make a statement. Time to represent. Time to let them know who you are. That you're part of the Black Op. With a brand new Black Op Radio t-shirt. Comes in all sizes. Wear it loud and proud. Join the Black Op today, www.blackopradio.com.
If you believe there's more to the JFK assassination and the mystery surrounding the CIA and its covert operations, you're not alone. Meet the man Oliver Stone called X in the epic motion picture JFK. Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty comes forward with never-before-seen or heard documentation and information about JFK, the Vietnam War, the CIA, and more on a brand new CD-ROM. The collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty is an incredible offer not to be missed. For a limited time only, find the answers surrounding these issues and more with the collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty. Call now at area code 604-525-4167. That's area code 604-525-4167. Or visit the Colonel Prouty reference site on the World Wide Web, the collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty.
Interviews with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, Secrets of the U-2 Flight. We are pleased to announce Volume 1 of Interviews with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty on DVD. This first one-hour DVD goes through the 1960 U-2 incident with Gary Powers. Colonel Fletcher Prouty reveals his inside knowledge of the...